Gopika Kanta Radha Kanchan Mostute Tapta Kanchan Gorangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Prashubhanu Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinubhye Vasha Patitana Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Vidadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 18, The Battle Between Lord Bor and Hiranyaksha. Text 5. Twai samstite garaya shirna shirshani Asmat Bhuja Chuttaya Ye Cha Tubyam Balim Haranti Vishaya Ye Cha Deva Swayam Sarve Na Balishanti Amula Twai samstite gadaya shirna shirshani
Twai samstite
Twai samstite gadaya shirshana shirshani
Twai samstite gadaya shirshana shirshani
Asmad buddha chutaya yeta chatubyu Tubyubhyam
Asmad Bhuja Tubyubhyam
Balim Haranti Rishayo Yechateva
Balim Haranti Rishayo Yechateva
Swayam Sarve Navipavishanti Amula Swayam Sarve Navipavishanti Amula Twai samstite garaya shirna shishani
Twai samstite garaya shirna shishani
Asmad bhuja chutaya ye chatubhyam
Asmad bhuja chutaya
Balim haranti rishaya ye chadeva Swayam sarve navavishantya mula Twai samstite garaya shirna shirshani
Twai samstite garaya shirna shirshani
Asmad bhuja chutaya ye chatubhyam
Asmad bhuja chutaya ye chatubhyam
Bali haran Rishayo ye cha deva Swayam sarena bhavishanti amula
Swayam sarena bhavishanti amula
Pai samstite gadaya shila shishani
Pai samstite gadaya shila shishani
Asmam bhuja shutaya ye cha rubyam
Asmam bhuja shutaya ye cha rubyam
Valim haram ti risayo ye cha deva
Valim haram ti risayo ye cha deva
Saya sarvena bhavishyanti amula
Saya sarvena bhavishyanti amula
Vahi samstite gadaya shirna shirshani
Twai samstite gadaya shirna shirshani
Chami.
Asmat Puja Chutayaya Chaturyam.
Asmat Puja Chutayaya Chaturyam.
Vahim Karanti Vishayo Nitya Deva.
Vahim Karanti Vishayo Nitya Deva.
Vahim Sarve Navavishyam Yamula.
Vahim Sarve Navavishyam Yamula.
Ladies,
Dari Samsite Ganaya Shina Shishami Asma Duja Chidaya Yeshadubhyam Vahim Manatya Vishayo Nikshadeva Svayam Sarvena Vishantyam activities. They are always envious of God and His devotees. Their propaganda not to worship in the temple or church, but simply to make material advancement for satisfaction of the senses, is always current. The demon Hiranyaksha, upon seeing the Lord face to face, wanted to make a permanent solution by killing the perfect personality of Godhead with his powerful mitts. That's one idea of a permanent solution. The example of an uprooted tree mentioned here by the demon is very significant. Devotees accept that God is the root of everything. Their example is, just as the stomach is the source of energy of all the limbs of the body, God is the original source of all energy manifested in the material and spiritual world. Therefore, supplying food to the stomach is the process to satisfy all the limbs of the body. Krishna consciousness, or developing love of Krishna, is the sublime method for satisfying the source of all happiness. The demon wanted to uproot this source because if the root, God, were to be checked, the activities of the Lord and his devotees and the devotees would automatically stop. The demon would be very much satisfied by such a situation in society. Demons are always anxious to have a godless society for their sense gratification. According to Sridhar Swami, this verse means that when the demon would be deprived of his mates by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only the neophyte devotees, but also the ancient, sagacious devotees of the Lord would be very much satisfied. Vai samstite garaya shirna shirshani asma puja chitaya ye chitubhyam pali maranti rishayo ye chiteva swayam sarve navavishantyamula. The demon continued, when you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace, hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages will offer you oblations and sacrifice in devotional service, will also automatically cease to exist like trees without roots. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purusadvitae Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvandeve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishe Shashunyavadi Paskatya Desakarna. Beginning of creation, there was some demons, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and today there are still some demons. There's a lot more demons, but they're just a lot smaller. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, "Dva Bhuta Sarvaro Bhuta Isvin, Daiva Masra Evacha, Daiva Vishra Sakrota, Asram Parthamesh Renew." That there are two kinds of persons in this world who are created. I've already explained to you about the divine nature, and now I'll explain to you about the demoniac nature. And Krishna takes a whole chapter glorifying the demons. I think that's glorifying, but explaining about the demons. And generally speaking, demons are very much interested in spreading lust, anger, and greed. Krishna says, Sri Vidamanara Kasyedam, Dwaram Nashanam Atmanaha, Kama Krodha Katalova, Tasmat Etam Trayam Tija. There are three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should become free from these three gates because they lead to the degradation of self. But the demons are very much interested in opening the gates of lust, anger, and greed and inviting everyone to rush in and experience with their life in an ever-increasing, more intense way. But Krishna consciousness is said to be the opposite. Here it mentions the verse, Yatatara mula nisheshanena trityanti taskana bujo pushaka pranahara chayatan vyanam tatayva sarvahanam atateja. Just like if you water the root of the tree, then the water goes to all the leaves and branches. Or by supplying food to the stomach, naturally the food is supplied to all the different parts of the body. If one serves a chuta, Lord Krishna, then naturally one's service will be extended to all of the entities. But here it says that the demons don't like the idea that God is the root of everything, because they want to imagine that they're the root of everything. That they don't want the devotees to serve Krishna, because if the devotees serve Krishna, the idea that their God will be exposed. But the material world is based upon an illusion where everyone's pretending to be something that they're not. And even when we become devotees, that pretension is also liable to be there to some degree. In other words, due to our false ego, we're still very much enamored by this material body, or the concept that I am something special, and why am I something special? Because my body or my mind is special. So this is called demoniac. Demoniac doesn't mean that demons have two horns and a tail and they carry around a fork, a pitchfork. That's not what demoniac means. Demoniac means that instead of advertising that Krishna is a worshipful object, we want others to think that somehow or another I'm the worshipful object. And it's not that only a few demons like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, you know, they're bad people and we're all good. No, that tendency to want to be the center of attention, making our bodies a worshipful object for ourselves and others, is there since time immemorial in every living entity. It's just that some living entities get a little special mention, some demons get special mention, because they're the exemplary demons. They're super demons, and the rest of us were to some degree little demons until we become fully Krishna conscious, or at least Krishna conscious enough to renounce the material concept of life. Other than that, we can also use devotional service to cultivate our demoniac consciousness. We may not be so much aware of it. That mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the greatest devotee of them all? Take a guess. Oh, it's not me, is it? Wow, you got it right. And we want, you know, Janam, Dhanam, Sundarim. We, in the natural conception of life, there's even religions who think that the proof that God is showing us mercy is that we have a nice material life. That's part of the one prominent religion within modern society. But also, we ourselves, even as devotees, we may think that as long as everything's going smoothly, are making advancement in the material and in the Krishna consciousness movement, I'm getting whatever I want, then it means that God is pleased with my service. He's reciprocating with me. And as soon as there's some impediment to my sense gratification, my false prestige, or my material situation, then I think there must be something wrong with God. He doesn't appreciate my service anymore. So why should I render him service? I'm not getting anything in return. So this mentality is there in all conditioned souls. And Krishna Bhagavad Gita Arjuna was a little worried because he understood it was also in his consciousness. So he asked Krishna in the sixth chapter, Arjuna Vacha, thank you. Arjuna Vacha, Ayati Shariyo Peto, Yoga Chalati Manasa, Aprap Yoga Samstidim, Kangatim Krishna Gachati. So, Arjuna asks, what is the destination of the unsuccessful yogi who takes through the process of yoga but later desists due to worldly mindedness and does not attain perfection and self-realization? So the word uses Yoga Chalati Manasa. Then the mind, Arjuna previously asked about, because he said, Chanjalami Manakrishna, Pramati Balavadridam, Tasyaham Nigrahamanye, Vayoriva Sadhisprita. That the system of yoga that you've summarized appears to be unendurable and impractical because the mind is restless, turbulent, and very strong, O Krishna, and to subdue it, it seems to me just like trying to control the wind. Krishna told Arjuna, if you take to the process in the right way, then, and with some time, some practice, then you should be alright after some time. But then Arjuna said, well, what about someone who took to the process, but then he does get deviated? What happens to him? Because as soon as one takes to a process of self-realization, then Maya declares war. It's not that Maya. Yoga is Chalati Manasa. And tries to defeat the practitioner by so many allurements. So why does Maya do it? Is Maya, she just doesn't like us, and she just wants to see people suffer in the material world. She's actually the devil. So why does Maya do that? Because Maya wants to make sure that we're not approaching Krishna to cause him trouble. As it says here, the demoniac principle is, people want to approach God, they're looking for God, even the demons are looking for God, but they want to kill him. Just like Kamsa and his friends. They thought it's hard to find Vishnu after Kamsa had tried to kill the last child of Devaki. He came into the room to smash the little kid onto the pavement. This is, speak of child abuse, this is, Bhagavatam has everything. This is the original child abuse in Kali Yuga, or right before Kali Yuga started. He smashed all the little kids on the ground. And this little child sprang up from his hands, the last little child, which happened to be a little girl, sprang up from his hands and appeared with eight arms as Durga Devi. So he was a little respectful because he was a demon. And demons generally worship the demigods because they know the demigods can give them their material desires. So he thought, well, if Devaki and Vasudeva could have Durga as their child, they must be quite materialistic. They're must be worshipable by me also. Because anyone who can have Durga must, who knows what kind of wealth and material assets they have. Therefore he asked for forgiveness, asked for benediction, that one day he could actually get Durga under his control. And they gave him all kinds of benedictions, forgave him for his atrocities, and he went back and told the other demons. And they said, well, don't trust anyone, don't even trust Durga. The only thing to do, our mission life, is to find Vishnu and kill him. But it's hard to find Vishnu because he's such a coward. He's hidden himself in the hearts of all living entities and he won't come out. So how can we kill him? He won't get out. He won't fight with us. And as far as Shiva goes, if we want to pick a fight with him, he's off meditating somewhere. Him and Brahma are just meditating somewhere, and Shiva's half crazy anyhow. Why bother picking a fight with him? So they thought, well, we want to kill Vishnu. Best way of killing him is, let's kill all the Brahmins and the cows. Stop all the sacrifices. Do something good for a king. So that was their idea, because they understood, just like here, that if you kill the Brahmins, you kill the sacrifice, then Vishnu won't get any food anymore. He won't get any offerings of love and respect, and he'll just dry up. Every demon thinks like that. There was Agasura. He thought, let all the coward boys enter into my mouth. All of the millions of coward boys enter into my mouth with all their calves and cows. And there's quite a bit of them. And after I swallow them, then all the residents of Vrindavan will become unhappy, so depressed that they'll all die, and therefore Vishnu Narayan won't get any more sacrifice, and he'll die too, and our lives will be successful. Every demon thinks like that. Just some demons are a little bit more vocal about it. But that's basically the idea of modern science. is based upon the principle to kill God, kill the concept of God. That you don't need God to create anything, you have monkeys creating everything. Or unimaginable occurrences creating everything. But make sure God is not in the center, make sure that we remove God, and then we can play as if we're in the center. And between those in the center, they fight with each other, devouring themselves. Just like in Srimad Bhojana, there is a mini yojana vat, or a swimming pool, and in that vat there are many worms. If you perform certain types of sinful activities, you become a worm in Srimad Bhojana. And in that vat, with all these worms, one big worm is devouring the other little worms. And a bigger worm than him is devouring him. And it goes on. Each worm is devouring the other worm. So that's called the society of dog eat dogs, or cats eat cats, or people eating people. Somehow or another, people are trying to devour each other, thinking I'm consuming you, therefore I'm proving that I'm God. I'm the Lord, I'm the enjoyer. And that's the major happiness in the material world. Although no one is the Lord, no one is the enjoyer, but as long as we feed our false ego, imagining ourselves to be the Lords and the enjoyers, we think ourselves to be happy. So material life means that I must feel myself to be like that, or else I cannot be happy. Happiness in material existence means feeling that my false ego is being satisfied. That gradually I am the Lord of so many things, and idama dhyamaya labhavam imam prapsyami anuradham idama sthiyamapi me bhavishyati punardhanam. So much wealth do I have. So that's the first thing the demons judge their lordship by, is economic development. Just like in modern society, people are enamored by the gross national product. Here, people are thinking that they're an advanced civilization, first world civilization, because we have advanced economic development. Actually, the only thing that's really advanced is their false ego. There's nothing else that's really advanced in the Western world, because they have no material assets, practically speaking. They've already destroyed most of their assets. They have no fresh water. Maybe here we have a little fresh water. They have no clean air. They have no nice food. They have no nice relationships with each other. Everything material, all material progress, they've destroyed. But they're expert at being demons. And therefore they know how to destroy not only their own assets, but they know how to destroy everyone else's assets. So that they're very good at. The destruction. So everyone's afraid of the demons. And therefore they offer their respects to the demoniac countries in the modern world. Impressed by how they're economically developing by destroying everything. Destroying the forests, destroying the resources, destroying each other. And they're very much impressed by them. Because that's demoniac. That's called the mode of ignorance. But the devotees should not be so much enamored by the so-called material progress, for unrestricted sense gratification, which is actually diminishing the resources more and more, so that the real sense gratification is diminishing. Instead of it, they should understand that without Dharma, without recognizing the root, that nothing works. If you take a plant and you decide to rip off all the leaves from the plant, so that, and take all the flowers and rip off all the leaves, you can't expect the plant is going to flourish. And after a while, when the plant dries up, you're going to starve. If you have a garden, you have to water the garden. You have to put some work into the root. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is cautioning everyone, Jagannath Bhavati Parjanyo, Anad Bhavati Bhudani Parjana Anasambhava, that even for the basic necessities of life, like food, one has to worship Krishna. Maybe due to some pious activities in the past, modern society still in the Western world has something that looks like food. Although most people, what they're eating, hardly would be really described as food from the Vedic point of view. All the dead animals that they're eating, all the innocuous things that go into their canned foods and bar, whatever else they're eating, is not really food. It's simply, Krishna says, it's jalna shishtajna shanto mutante sarvakilvisha. They're just eating sinful sin. They're just preparing themselves for their next lower species of life body. Evam pravartitam chakram nanu varti itiyaya agayor indriyara mokam parthasajivati. They may be declaring how great they are. You read the newspapers, you read their history, they're declaring how wonderful they are. What a wonderful situation we're under right now. And we're very much impressed because we have some heat and we have something that, you know, we can go to the store and buy some food. We don't know that it's all being created or being supplied to us on the basis of exploiting others, and people either in this lifetime or in some future lifetime will have to pay the price. So although the demons are very proud of their civilization, they don't know that the result will be that they're causing suffering to themselves and to others. And although they've declared that they've killed God, there's no more laws of nature that we have to worry about. We can go on enjoying our senses unrestrictedly, but God is very much there in this world, and the reactions will be there also. It is simply their imaginations. So although the demons are very much anxious to mislead people into believing that God has disappeared, the laws of nature have disappeared, or they never existed, they declare that God is dead. But little do they know that soon they'll be dead, and that their God's agents will come and take them away and give them their appropriate reward for their sinful activities. And we don't have to wait for our next lifetime. People are born into for instance, countries in this planet where they're suffering, or animal life, or whatever species of life. This is the same persons who in the past were big leaders of the previous modern societies, atheistic, godless societies. So they've taken birth in a miserable condition, and the persons who perform some pious activities, they may be given some facility presently so that they could also perform sinful activities. But it is the job of the Krishna consciousness movement to inform people that there is something called the law of karma. Even nowadays people believe in the law of karma, but they don't know that they can actually go down to lower species of life. They think karma means there's only good karma. That everything's going to be alright, there's nothing to worry about. Just think positive. When you do things that are negative, think positive. But this is called fool themselves, and it's called pretenders. So one has to understand properly how things are working, and that our job is to water the root of Krishna, to find out what he wants us to do, and to try to please him. Here it says he's pleased by loving service. So the demons, it says, they don't like that. That how dare their people believe in God and take it seriously. They don't mind if you believe in God, but don't take it too seriously. You can believe in something called God, whatever you want to believe, but just as long as it helps you in your sense gratification. And Maya is very expert. She's helping everyone. That until we become fully Krishna conscious, there's always some shaya, doubts. Doubts about Krishna, doubts about the process of devotional service, so many doubts. But those doubts are there because we still want to pretend that we're somehow or another supreme, although we're insignificant in the sense that we're not any better than anyone else who's trapped in the material world. even when they're aspiring to become devotees. And although Krishna appreciates that, and the devotees can appreciate that, but we should appreciate that we're also bewildered by the illusory energy and misidentifying ourselves with these bodies and mind. And as long as we're trying to, some way or another, get something here in the material world for our happiness, we're also being misled by the illusory energy. And until we learn how to dedicate all our energies to Krishna's service, in a way, simply with the idea of pleasing Him, that we have to remain humble and not think ourselves to be perfect, powerful, and happy. So Maya will always tell that we're actually something special. But actually, the only thing special about us is that we're one of the few criminals in the material world. All the other people don't think they're special. They're all in the spiritual world trying to please Krishna. And everyone who's trying to think themselves special in some way, they're here in the material world imagining themselves to be something special. All based upon this body or subtle mind, which has nothing to do with ourselves. Just gifts to us by the illusory energy, so we can imagine ourselves to be something other than Krishna's servant. Therefore, the conclusion is, a neophyte devotee, such as ourselves, we have to perform regulated devotional service, so that we can try to learn the process of dedicating our energies in the service of Krishna and gradually learn how to give up these false conceptions that we have of how special we are, namely identifying with this body. As soon as one gets a body, everyone thinks it's special, every living entity, from the grasshopper to Lord Brahma, thinks they're special. They think they're doing something very important in the material world. That's a special mission. But we only have really one mission, to please Krishna with whatever energies He's given us, and then we'll get out of all these misconceptions, and our demoniac mentality will be killed by the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should always remember we're 1/10,000 the size of Tipuheran size. We may be a little special to Krishna, because Krishna is very kind, Krishna's devotees are very kind, but that's the only thing we're special. Otherwise, everyone here is an incarnation, as I mentioned before, everyone here is a mudha avatar, full incarnation. Always ready to be knocked by the illusory energy into another body, another material circumstance, where we can again imagine ourselves to be something special. But this happiness from this imagination is tuchava, is completely insignificant, has no real basis in reality. Only by developing a humble service attitude, not giving any credit to ourselves, giving all credit to the other devotees and the previous acharyas, whatever we're able to do, always feeling ourselves to be an instrument, always feeling grateful that we can be an instrument, not taking credit for anything that we're doing, always feeling ourselves meek and humble, dependent upon Krishna and His devotees, only in that attitude can we actually experience real freedom and happiness. Otherwise, we may walk around with our ego and try and massage it, even in the company of devotees, and wonder why everyone's not massaging my ego. And trying to find who wants to massage my false ego. So that will not be very productive or whatever. So, here it mentions about neophyte devotees. We follow the process as strictly as we can, try to understand what our real situation is, see the demons, try to avoid them, because by trying to avoid them, we can avoid our own false ego. Trying to fight against demons right now, we wouldn't be very successful because we're not so powerful. Krishna's not empowered us so much, as a society especially. All we can do is try to cultivate the process of devotional service with tolerance, rely upon Krishna, and Krishna will take care of everything else. So, stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Yes, I was wondering, like, the first of the demons,
determined and enthusiastic.
Yeah, they have such a strong motivation to spread the
enthusiasm. We're not so enthusiastic. Well, that's because we're still we're still partially aligned with demons to some degree. We don't really want to disturb the demons too much because we're afraid they're going to take all our toys away from us. And we're not so convinced, because we were convinced that if I was so completely dedicated and enthusiastic to spread Krishna consciousness, I'd get all the mercy of Krishna. We'd do something like that. But we're not so convinced. We're kind of on the Tatista platform. That's called Kanista Adhikara. We don't want to rock the boat too much, but we want to make a little spiritual progress. So we have one foot in the water trying to test it out, spiritual water, but we want to keep our foot firmly on the ground of material life in case the water is too cold and I don't like it. So that may take some time, some progress, before we become enthusiastic enough to try to do something practical to defeat the illusory energy, the illusory consciousness of current society. Under the guidance of Prabhupada, when this person is present here, somehow or another is able to motivate the devotees for a very intense devotional service comparatively. So that may take some time before we again come to that same platform. But if we stick with it, we make some gradual process, keep ourselves in the fire, and gradually the fire will get hotter and hotter and hotter. One day I'll become hot again. We'll be able to do something significant. Yes. Yeah, sure, to some degree. But we have to see what happens. I mean, some degree, Krishna consciousness is spreading. Books are going out. The temples are opening. Things are going on. But I suppose Chaitanya Mahaprabhu probably came to the Western world specifically, because even if Krishna consciousness became very prominent in India, no one would take it very seriously in other parts. But now, yeah, of course, India, because everyone, you know, people are fanatic religiousness, and many fanatics in India who worship, you know, Krishna, Aboriginal cowboy boy. Unless it actually takes, it becomes prominent within America, especially in Western Europe, the rest of the world won't take it very seriously. But although there is some revival of Krishna consciousness to some extent in India, but to the extent that our acharyas desire it, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name will be glorified in every town and village, we still have a little ways to go. Not that nothing has happened, but we shouldn't be too complacent. Besides that, it doesn't really matter either if Krishna consciousness was everywhere around the world, but if we were in Krishna consciousness, it's Krishna has given us an opportunity to dedicate our energies in His service. So He's created a movement for our benefit. He gives us a chance to utilize what He's given us. So we have to look at it as an opportunity. Not that they all went back to God in India, but I'm still here in the material world. And I'm going to be here till the end of Kali Yuga. No. Somewhere or another we have to become an instrument, and then at least if we go back to God, that would be nice. Besides that, we can understand that even long after we're all back to God, there'll still be a lot of demons running around this material world. Same thing will be going on. Although maybe we were as merciful as Prahlad Maharaj, he said, I don't want to go back to Godhead until everyone is delivered first. So we need that merciful, we can think like that. Or Vasudev Das, he said, let me take all the sins on my head, let me suffer for them, let everyone go back to the spiritual world. So that's the pure heart of such an advanced devotee like Vasudev Das. Yes. Kill all those little kids quick. Off with their heads. Yeah. You were disappointed in Narada Muni. You were wondering what kind of saintly person this is. Whose side is he on anyhow? He looks pretty nice playing that flute on Ladina, glorifying Krishna, but he gets in bad company, you never know what he's going to do. Well, that's explained in the Bhagavatam. And Narada Muni, he wanted that Krishna come as quickly as possible. He wanted to accelerate Krishna's appearance. Therefore, he wanted the informed Kansa of these things so that Kansa would kill each child one after another, so gradually the eighth child would be there. Oh, Narada Muni didn't tell the Kansa. Well, he said, just be aware. He didn't say, kill all those little kids. He just be aware. He said, you're a little bewildered. You're thinking that the eighth child will kill you. But you never know which is actually the eighth child. Because maybe the first child is actually the number eight child. Who knows, maybe the third child is number eight. Who knows how they're using their mathematics? The demigods are pretty tricky. Who knows how they explain this? Maybe it's the third child is actually the eighth. And the eighth is the third. So Kamsa is just warning Kamsa. In your previous lifetime you were Kalanimi and Vishnu came and killed you. So he's going to come and kill you again. He's just telling the truth. Yes. Yeah, I mean, Narada Muni, he acts as an instrument for Krishna. It's not that one day he woke up on the wrong side of Narada Muni and said, yeah, let's kill some kids. I'm tired of being a saintly person all the time. It's boring. Excuse me. No, he's an instrument for Krishna. Krishna had told him that's what he wanted. So we'll be able to understand it more clearly when we enter into the pastimes of Krishna. We'll see that Narada, sometimes Krishna has that. That all these demons, they were all playing different parts. Just like in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we find that he had one servant, Krishna Das, and he got allured by the Bhattacharyas. But Krishna Das is a Nityasiddha devotee. So, yeah. So although he was even rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was given some service by Lord Nityananda and the other devotees. But he wasn't in the Gauravana Deshadipi. He's explained which is his role in Krishna's pastimes. He's a Nityasiddha. So sometimes these pastimes arrange this for our benefit, just so we can understand something about what the spiritual nature is. Even some of the demons who took part in Krishna's pastimes, like Putana, they were not ordinary demons. Otherwise, how did they go about the spiritual world afterwards? So they were some special personalities who were given that benediction to take part in that particular role. So Narada, he's acting as an instrument of Krishna to fill some people apart in those pastimes.
One of them, of course, is to liberate the sons of Lord Brahma, or the sons of, what was his name, Maharishi? Get the name of the Prajapati. Maharishi, yeah, the son of Maharishi, who had looked at abhorrence of Brahma's act of running after his daughter, and therefore they were cursed. They took birth as the sons of Aranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, and then they again took birth as the sons of Devaki, who were killed by Kamsa, and then they were liberated by Krishna. So Narada, when he didn't have, he may have known, he may not have known, but he knew that that's what Krishna wanted him to do, that's what he did. No, it didn't say they came from the heavenly planets. It said they came from some planet of the magicians in the third canto. Excuse me? No, they didn't come from the heavenly planets. They were demons. They were actually genuine demons. But they came from some higher Asura planet. Yeah, at least some of them did. Well, higher or lower or whatever. They came from, they had more super, they were, had some supernatural powers. They were demons. Agasura, Venukasura. They were personalities, they were swords. Just like here, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. I don't know if we're going to say they came from a higher planet, but they were more powerful demons. The Daityas and the Danavas, the Yakshas, some of the demons are more powerful. So they were powerful demons who came to try to kill Krishna, as demons usually do. Some of them did. Some of them went to, like Putana, a special demon, and she went to Krishna Loka. Others they just merged into Krishna, like Shushupal or others. Or others like Agasura. She just merged. You don't want to know. They're spiritual, they merge into the fullness. Anything else? See, when we read the pastimes, all we can do is read them from our point of view. But a liberated soul, when they read them, they don't have this material concept of life that we have. How can a good person like Narada do bad things? No, whatever Narada does is perfect. He does it completely out of devotion to Krishna. And he does, he's always directed by the super soul. He says, even if Lord Nityananda walks into a liquor shop, we should start thinking, you know, what happened to Lord Nityananda? He had a hard day at banker. We shouldn't think about that. Now he has a purpose to go there. Even Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, in their pastimes, they came upon one sannyasi in his hut. And the sannyasi wanted to give them some prasadam. He said, let me give you happiness. And Lord Chaitanya said, what is happiness? He asked Lord Nityananda. He said, he's trying to give you some liquor. And the sannyasi's wife brought out the happiness. So Lord Chaitanya, when he saw that, he ran to his Gandhis and threw himself in. So people may wonder, what is Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda doing in the house of this, you know, so-called sannyasi who has a wife and is a drunkard? What was he doing there? If he's God, why did he walk into this person's house? He didn't deliver him. He had to run to the Gandhis and throw himself in there. Can you figure it out? So does that mean we should start doubting Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya? What are they doing there? How do they get so bewildered? It's like Kishore Das Babaji. He'd chant his japa in all different places. Sometimes he'd chant in the steps of a brothel, of one prostitute there. He'd chant in her house. Just so people wouldn't come and bother him. Sometimes he would be chanting in a latrine at the end of his life, so people, they wouldn't come there and bother him. So does that mean that we should start thinking that, you know, what is Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, what is he doing there? Oh, that's his activities, his pastime. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Grandra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Ki Jai.